Hello and welcome to the Oxford Internet Institute podcast, part of the University of Oxford. In each episode, we look at issues and developments in the digital world that matter to us all. Today, we're joined by Professors Vicky Nash and Katya Hertog. Vicky is the director of the OII and an expert in online safety. Katya is an expert on parental control apps and domestic AI. I'm Vina. Welcome to the podcast. Vicky, it'd be great to start with you. How has the role of digital technologies in children's lives evolved over the past couple of decades?
It has changed so much in such a remarkably short period of time. I've been in this area for probably just over 20 years. And we've moved, first of all, on the technological front, which I'll explain, and then perhaps on the sort of the context of use. So on the technology front, we started out where really families had a PC, a single PC. You put it in the hall or the lounge and you could watch over what your children did. That's sort of early 2000s. Then there was the move to mobile. And obviously what that introduced was the possibility suddenly that children had their own device in their pocket that they could use away from the home, in their own rooms and away from parental eyes. That's a big enough change. Then if we think about the move to app-based interfaces and tablets and so on, you see the rise of what I would call a sort of pre-literate internet user. You don't need to read in order to be able to go online. And now, you know, thinking about where we are in the 2020s, obviously we have a context where children aren't just using screens to go online and use digital tools. They are surrounded by them through smart devices, smart toys, monitoring devices, etc., which may not obviously appear to connect into the internet. So that's the technological change. And I guess the other thing I suppose I'd flag is the way in which the places we've used them have changed. So as I say, it started off maybe just in the family lounge. And now, kids are using the internet, using digital technologies everywhere they go, on the bus, walking to school. They are an integral part now, I think, of education, even at really early ages. So, I think that we've seen a really significant shift over the past two decades.
And building on that, what changes do you expect to see happen in the near future?
I'm really bad at futurology, and there's a reason why I've never invested, I think, in new technologies. But, for me, some of the things that I'm interested in watching at the moment are particularly around the integration of AI in sort of things like social media, obviously also in programs and apps that are used to monitor children or track their progress at schools. And also just in seeing how these ever sort of smarter devices become an increasing part of young children's lives. I think the other thing that we are, increasingly seeing that's worth watching is the way in which data from a lot of these different types of, app and tool are being used to make decisions about children and young people. And I think that is only going to get ever greater.
Is the UK doing enough to prepare children for life in the digital age?
So obviously I'm going to answer yes and no here, because arguably no, you can never do enough. And I think, we do need to be aware that you probably could never do this perfectly. But actually, I think we are doing quite a significant amount, which is worth, praising us for. So the UK has been quite quick, I think, to embrace, two aspects which really matter. So one is around ensuring that children have access to technology in learning and in schools. So in particular, if we think about the sort of social inequality in people's homes, it's really, really important that kids get to use the internet in their education. So that's a sort of universal approach. So we embrace that pretty early on. We've been arguably a little bit less good at thinking about, say, what we might call media literacy skills as opposed to technological skills. So there are certainly places for it in the curriculum, but I think what we lack is a sort of wholesale investment in that. I think there was an all-parliamentary group a couple of years ago, back in 2022, said we need a proper media literacy bill. I know that Internet Matters, one of the big children's charities, has just in the last year launched a manifesto saying we need, much more joined up action in this space. And then maybe, I suppose I can probably talk more if you want about things like legislation and safety. So I think we've been pretty good, but we've definitely been better at some aspects than others. And I would say we're better at teaching technical skills than we are maybe teaching life skills.
Right. And are there enough safety measures to protect children?
Again, I'm going to suggest that we need to wait and see here. So one area where, again, the UK has been quite forward-thinking has been in developing specific safety regulation around children's use of digital technologies and specifically user-to-user services and search services. So we have something called the Online Safety Act. It came into effect last year. It has yet to sort of be enforced, though. So we are at a period where, if you like, we have the law in place, and we have a regulator, but they're developing specific guidance which will affect how companies' responsibilities need to change. I think that legislation is quite an interesting approach. It introduces, you know, what's been called a sort of duty of care. So suggesting that actually, you know, these types of companies have to ensure that they are keeping children protected from the worst sorts of online harms. And so, you know, to the extent that we've got that, we've got other regulation, things like the Age Appropriate Design Code. I think, you know, we're quite well supported in law, but I am aware there are already critiques as to how, you know, how effective these can or would be. And for me, you know, I suppose I'm ever the cautious academic, I would quite like us to wait and see what effect these particular frameworks have before we decide whether or not we need more measures, particularly on the sort of the regulatory side.
Katia, moving on to you, should we potentially restrict at least young children's access to smartphones? You know, maybe only allow children to have smartphones from a certain age?
That's a really interesting question. I think my first answer to that would be that the risks and harms that young people, children, adolescents face online are not just technical in nature, they're socio-technical. So they, even if we arrive at a perfect design and we have a really thoughtful consideration on when it is appropriate for young people to start using those perfect devices, this design would not affect the social nature of those risks and harms. So I think it's a conversation very much worth having, but at the same time, it should not be the only conversation we're having. I think we have to be very aware that it's not going to be a magic bullet that will solve all the problems, and the risks that potentially will be reduced, or maybe some of them will be removed, will also need to be considered about in this effort to have a perfect design. The risks that will be removed in our efforts to have a perfect design. We also need to think about what opportunities we are foregoing in supporting young people in other way, in looking at the social aspects of the risks and harms that young people may be facing.
And how can parents and teachers support children with technology when they may not even know much about it themselves?
I think that actually, again, takes me back to the socio-technical nature of the risks. So technology changes. In some ways, we often are, as Vicky started her conversation saying, in 2000, it looked like this. Mm-hmm. 2024, we have a completely different picture. The children's digital lives look very different for now than they were from anyone who is parenting now. So many parents may feel, at the very least, insecure with these new technologies, the new capabilities brought in by generative AI, for example. And many can feel completely powerless and overwhelmed by this rapid change. At the same time, these technologies might be amplifying certain risks. Some of the risks may be new, but I think to a large number of risks and harms, they're old risks and harms that are in the new guise. And to give you an example, young people's lives were not completely risk-free before we had mobile phones. Young people, in sort of a couple decades ago, young people, you know, drank more often, the drug consumption was up, the teenage pregnancy rates were much higher than they are today. All these trends have been going down. So in some, maybe in a physical sense, in the UK, young people's lives are somewhat safer today than they were, you know, 2 decades back. There are multiple reasons why this is the case, but one of these is also that children are spending larger proportion of their lives online, where they're encountering new sets of risks. Parents could be addressing these risks to some extent, sort of through tools of communication with young people, trying to find out what's going on in their lives in the ways that maybe in the past a young person was out and about with a group of friends that parents might think could bring about risks or harms for that child. And the way they could address that, especially for an older, we're not talking about a 5-year-old, but especially for an older child, is probably talking to them, finding out more about what's going on, advising them when we, as parents, feel that something is off, that this is not quite right. I think this is where many parents could address these risks and not feel completely, because it's digital, it's completely different. There's nothing I can do about it now.
Yeah, and on that point, you know, what do we need to consider when we think about the role of parents in safeguarding children? You've covered some things, but I'm curious if there's anything else to add there.
So there is, thinking as an academic now, I think the first thing, think about the concept of connective labor. This is generally, it's not only relevant for relationships between parents and children, but it's something that we do as humans where we do better when we talk to each other, we can listen to each other, and we feel that we get heard for the other side. I think this is something that's a very important part of parenting in particular. And I think that one of important parents' roles is to keep children safe, but the other is to help them grow. And much of that safety also happens through communication. Helping them grow, communication is a very important part of it. And I think sometimes in our conversations around digital technologies, smartphones today, the part of helping children grow and potentially as they're hitting adolescence, becoming, you know, reaching the age of 16, 17, when they're at the cusp of becoming legally adult, children also need autonomy. And I think the role of parents is not just to keep children safe, but we also need to remember about supporting their autonomy and helping them to grow up to be adults who can stay safe and well online at the point when they're adults and the parents don't really have much, or maybe don't want to have much, like control and oversight over their lives.
So you mentioned autonomy there and control and the importance of clear communication between parents and children. What do we know so far about how digital lives are controlled or perhaps monitored by parents?
So I think there's a lot of anxiety. Parents experience a lot of anxiety about their children's digital lives. I think some of it comes from this fast pace of change, from the fact that growing up, parents have not experienced the environment that their children are growing up in. They don't really have anyone to fall back on very easily. And so there's a lot of anxiety, and that might be one of the reasons why one of the first things we think about, how can we control it? How can we keep children safe? So safety, control are featuring very prominently. If we look just at one statistic, Ofcom published and publishes an annual report asking about various aspects of children's digital lives. But one of them is, how often do parents use, you know, monitoring and control technologies? And 70% of parents in the UK with children aged between 3 and 17 say that they use some kind of technology to control their children's access to online content. So this is something that is very prevalent. This is very commonly used.
Can I add one more thing to that I think is also really interesting? So one of the things I've been looking at a little bit over the last few years is the variety of products that are available for parents to conduct this sort of monitoring and surveillance. And I think it's very fascinating to me quite how many of those products effectively have taglines that suggest you are a better parent or you love your child more if you use a location tracking device, for example, or an online content filter of some sort. So it doesn't surprise me that the figure has got to the point that it has.
I thank you, Vicky. This was a really wonderful addition. And I wanted to add to that a little bit. I've also looked a bit at those products. And I think there's another aspect to it. What I've seen, they don't necessarily highlight the value of communication. I've seen one product which tracks children's offline location, and it says you don't need to ask anymore. So that explicitly highlights the fact that your child will be safer and you don't necessarily need to talk. And on the one hand, as a parent, I can think sometimes maybe talking to a teenager can be stressful, can be difficult. Maybe a child is in that time in their life when they're really battling for their autonomy and as a result are not as open to communication with the parents. So I could see how this sort of product or marketing line could feed into those difficulties people routinely experience. But at the same time, I think it's a little bit risky or less than optimal that it seems to discourage the product, seem to say that what's important in parenting is safety and have the right information on your child, and now this product will deliver that information to you, but completely forgets about this whole other aspect of parenting, which is communication, you know, talking, trying to maybe share opinions, trying to bring the child over to your point of view, or learning from them and understanding their point of view and understanding that actually I thought about internet or what your activity on the internet in this way, and I imagined it as something that doesn't seem safe or good to me, but now you told me about what you're doing and it shifted my opinion somewhat.
It sounds like parental control apps are almost a can of worms with as many benefits as risks. And I want to move on to the children's perspective. Do we know much about children's views of these tools?
So in the academic literatures, both Vicky and myself have been noticing recently, and full disclosure, we are collaborating, there is not much. Children's views are not completely absent, but they are a minority in this conversation. Much more often we hear more from parents, from experts. Children's views might appear as perhaps as part of a survey with a preset questions. A survey is somewhere where someone prepared questions of what they think is important. So if you collect children's views in these ways, there's some opinions you might miss because as an expert, you didn't imagine them. So over the past year, Vicky and myself have been running focus groups with 16-year-olds to address specifically that gap, to address this question. How do young people think and feel about these technologies? And we've got some preliminary results which feel informative, surprising, interesting to us. So maybe I'll mention just a few small things. One of the things that was quite prominent to us is location tracking. When parents use digital technologies for location tracking, seems to be less contentious for children than digital, the tracking of their children's digital activities. Parents using digital technologies to track their children's digital activities. And while it's still an ongoing piece of work, one of the sort of quite clear distinctions there is that location tracking is often experienced as something communal. It's often done jointly within families, for example, where parents track children, but children get also to track parents and can sometimes use it by like, oh, the mom's passing by the shop. Can you get me X? Or, oh, I'm home already. I can see my mom will be back in half an hour. It can also, like, children see clear benefits for themselves in location tracking sometimes. Like, young people shared that sometimes it was often used by parents for pickup, for children picking up children somewhere in the evening from a pub. We're talking to like 16, 17-year-olds. So when they're out and about, some young people surprisingly even felt that location tracking was less intrusive than parents sending them regular texts, which can be experienced quite a visible intrusion in a group of friends, where one young man said, well, the mom just sent me a text every hour, and he presumably had to pick up the phone, check on the text, tell her that he's still alive, whereas the location tracking is done completely passively and in the background. So while there are other aspects there, like privacy infringement and so on, but at least in a sort of completely practical way, this was experienced as sometimes helpful and often done jointly and therefore less contentious. Those aspects were very much absent when we asked about digital tracking. I don't think we've heard of any family where a child will be digitally tracking their parents' activities online, like where parents would be sharing which websites they've been visiting, which, you know, how long they spent watching what on Netflix, binge watching something on Netflix and so on. So this is a much more hierarchical and sort of power inequality, sort of an experience that's saturated with power inequality for young people. There were also, in young people's experiences, seem to have been less joint understanding, less feeling that I can see how this benefits me, or I can see that in a way when they're out and about, they could feel that, oh, I would really like to be picked up now. It's quite difficult to explain where I am. This location tracking app really helps me. There were no similar experiences with digital tracking. And I think, and there was the final thing, there was fairly limited communication actually around all kinds of tracking. We always asked the young people, so how did you arrive at these family practices? You know, when your parents set up certain rules around it, have you discussed it? And again, I would like to highlight, we're talking to 16-year-olds. So they're not very young children. They are adolescents who are closing into adulthood, and yet they could remember, very rarely they could remember conversations about it within their families. And when they did, quite often, there was a conversation, it was more of a parent explaining to the young person that they want to do this and these are the settings, rather than a joint exchange of opinion and arriving at the joint rules around it. And I think that sort of very much colored young people's experiences in that space. I hope I covered, like, I didn't miss anything.
Oh, you did a super job, actually. So, yeah, it's been fascinating quite how much there have been common themes, I think, in these answers amongst these very different groups of teenagers we've been talking to. Yeah.
And I'll open this one up to both of you. What might be some of the unintended consequences of parental controls of children's technology use? I know one you mentioned earlier, Katia, was this idea that information and safety is now regarded or positioned as a more important part of parenting than effective and transparent communication. I'm curious about what other unintended consequences might be.
So one thing that I think we do need to acknowledge a bit more, when we use this word autonomy, it covers quite a lot of things in the context of thinking about teenagers growing up. And some of that is about learning to take risks, and some it's about having your own private space, some it's about emotionally maturing. But of course, there are aspects of that where parental oversight may in some rare cases be really problematic. So if you are in a household that is not a happy family, or you have a parent that is, you know, controlling or abusive, obviously these types of tools can be very badly misused, and not just for children. Another, of course, is if you are struggling with things like your sexuality or your gender identity or other aspects of, you know, other sort of really quite deep problems and questions that teenagers may want to ask, but which they don't yet want to talk to their parents about. So that, for me, is a sort of major concern that I think we talk so much about internet safety and digital safety and the risks of technology. You know, we very rarely think about the benefits of having, you know, yes, these very private devices in our pockets at a moment where we have many things that we maybe are not yet ready to share with the world. Mm. And I really worry that that space will disappear the more that these tools are used. So, yeah, that definitely is a concern to me, I think.
I had one small addition. I mean, another thing that became quite visible to me in our conversations with young people is that also some of these controls and rules I experienced as a contradiction by young people. So we've been talking about parental control technologies and sort of when young people use digital technologies in their private lives for their entertainment and communicating with friends. But of course, in 2024, we expect young people are expected to use digital technologies for their education very much. It's very much part of, I mean, I think every young person in our focus groups in their schools, they had to do a lot of their school life and homework was done on digital devices. Parental controls and school set controls sometimes came into direct contradiction with the assignments and the requirements that were set up. So one young woman, for example, mentioned that she really liked, I think it was bow and arrows, like arrow shooting. And then she discovered that there were filters set up on her devices when she tried. She wanted some brave costume, I think. And she ran into trouble searching for it on the internet and so on. But that is maybe a funny example. But other young people said that sometimes preparing for school reports, looking in depth. Someone was looking in depth into like cannabis, I think, and it was a school assignment. They couldn't do it on a school device because of the control setup. And they said, well, I mean, I just did it on my phone. what was interesting to me, particularly in those conversations, is when those contradictions became apparent to young people, they lost a little bit of trust and in adults and the experts and teachers in their lives, feeling that, like, you're setting me up with contradictory demands. I can't do what you also want me to do. And they were maybe becoming a little bit less inclined to listen to, you know, advice or information that was being shared with them. And I think it's a shame. And I think we should very much recognize how much, on the one, we expect young people to use digital technologies as part of their education and maybe anything else. I mean, Duke of Edinburgh exercise is very much an outdoorsy thing to do. It's hike young people do. But a lot of, like, signing up for it is done on an app. All the homework is done on an app. One young person once said to me, well, you know, if my parents set the screen time control to 7 hours a day, I mean, I just spend 6 hours at school and I'm on the device most of the sort of to do my school activities. How is that supposed to work? So I think we should be aware of these aspects as well and think a bit more carefully about what we want young people to do and where, how we want them to develop their relationship with technology.
I would also just flag, I suppose we haven't really, in our research, had a chance to talk to the parents, but no. I think, you know, one other question I'd love to answer in the future is whether or not these types of app and tool make parents less anxious or more anxious. So yeah, maybe for further conversation.
And my final question is, what would you both like to see that would enable children and families to live their best lives with digital technologies?
So I had a small point. I was thinking that I would first and foremost want to see a more nuanced debate around it, as we're still all working out the roles we want digital technologies to play in our lives generally, and very importantly, young people, children in particular. We want to promote their safety and well-being. And more recently, it felt that certain voices were more dominant, potentially reflecting parents' anxiety in those spaces. And I would like to have more nuanced debates around it and to have more young people's voices coming in so we can learn from them and understand their perspectives and experiences with it better to inform and guide our own thinking around these technologies.
I would completely agree with all that. And I really like the fact, actually, that you framed this question in terms of, you know, living your best life. So in a way, for me, that's the very first thing, is I would like us to have, you know, bigger and better aspirations for what we expect from families and children's uses of technology, that it's not just about keeping people safe, it's about flourishing. But for me, I suppose I spend a lot of time thinking about appropriate policy frameworks in this sort of area. And so I guess for me, if we're going to enact that and all the things that Katya's just, you know, beautifully articulated, it does mean having a much more ambitious and much more sort of joined up policy approach to this. So yes, it means having, you know, appropriate and effective and enforced regulation. And I guess we'll see whether, you know, we currently have that. We'll see how it does. I mean, for me, I think I would like it to focus perhaps a little bit more on the design of these technologies and how they work as systems and, you know, what algorithms encourage us to do or not do, et cetera. But, you know, we'll see. But it does also mean things like investing in, you know, appropriate education for all children, media literacy, critical thinking, embedding these technologies in appropriate and well-governed ways in education and not beyond that. And actually, I think it also, you know, we have to find some better way of engaging with parents, because I do feel that, you know, at the moment they have the sort of fewest resources, really, and the least support to engage in this process in sort of meaningful ways. So, yeah, I fear it is going to be expensive and time-consuming, but I think we can get there if we try.
Vicky and Katya, thank you so much for joining me on the OII podcast today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.